All right, we'll go ahead and get started today. We'll continue our discussion of the Ask the Pastor series. Got the teens in here today. Daniel has two sick kids at home, so we asked if they could join us. But I said, perfect, because we're talking about mental illness. Not because I think they are mentally ill, but because this issue is very helpful for teenagers, because this does tend to be, things of this nature can tend to be very prominent, especially in the teenage years and younger adulthood. So hopefully this can be helpful for them too. So the question that was posed today, how can Christians handle mental illness like anxiety or depression biblically? This is an important subject. Frankly, I may say some things that you may not like. Probably nothing new there. But some things that maybe you haven't heard before or haven't considered a lot before, because we're just kind of fed a particular kind of narrative with regards to these things. And often because mental illness is a very difficult thing to really ascertain and understand and deal with, we don't spend a lot of time really thinking biblically about this important subject. Let me start off today. Well, we're gonna focus on those two that were mentioned in the question, anxiety and depression. You know, of course, there's a variety of things that are called mental illness today. But these issues are very predominant. So this is, I'm going to pull up some things from the Anxiety and Depression Association of America. Okay, this is kind of the national, you know, guru, if you want to call that, nationally known association here in America, the ADAA. According to them, 7% of Americans have a depressive episode each year. And those ages 18 to 25 are at higher risk of depression. And when you read things a little bit more in depth, they'll even say those below 18, they're very prone to this kind of thing as well. That's why I say this is an issue that really does come along with younger people. Not that older folks don't get this at times, but particularly with those who are younger in age, they seem particularly prone to this. Everyone experiences periods of sadness and lowness of mood, but depression is described as when these things persist over time or in severity, including having a prolonged sense of hopelessness. Okay, so it's not just saying, well, I'm sad because, you know, Art Lunt died, for instance. Okay, that's natural. We would expect a level of sadness from situations like that. Depression is when that mood persists over a lengthy period of time, when it affects our lives in particular ways, and that could be a variety of different ways, and it has a prolonged sense of hopelessness. Now, let me ask you a question. Why do you suppose the younger ages are seemingly prone to this, or particularly more prone to this? Why do you suppose that would be the case, according to the ADAA? Why do you think that would be the case?
Social media.
Social media. Why that, John?
Because it projects a false sense of reality. Young people especially derive their worth based on the interactions they have, the approval they gain, and a variety of other things if you want to actually study.
Yep, that's exactly right. Social media is a big, big part of that. Ian?
Hormones and prolonged adolescence.
Yeah, hormones, prolonged adolescence. That's also a factor. Yeah, Gail?
The teen years I would never, ever, ever want to repeat. That's how low I felt about myself and my life.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Well, a certain amount of it was how you're perceived in school by your peers.
Sure, yep.
And I wasn't part of the cool gang.
Yep.
And you strive to try to be like them.
Yep.
And you can't attain that.
Yeah. Peer pressure, we maybe could put it that way. Influence of peers, yeah. Deb?
There's the focus on grades. I don't know if there's as much focus as when we were in school. school, but it was almost like everything hinged, the rest of your life hinged on getting good grades. So that, you know, is another thing that if you don't have good grades, does it, you know, bring you down?
Sure, yeah, okay. Grades can be a factor in that. Marshall? Yeah, family life can play a big part of that. What else? Jer?
I think it can have, especially with the age 18 to 25, like, a lot of people say those are like the best years of your lives, and so you're supposed to just live it up. And so a lot of these kids, you know, go through college, and they graduate college, and they're just like living for themselves, and they just realize that this isn't it. You know,
yeah.
Like they go, they party, you know, they do everything that the world tells them will fulfill them.
Mm-hmm.
And they just realize that this isn't what's going to truly fulfill. Therefore, you know, they go into depression, and they're like, what is life?
Yeah. Yeah, good. All that, true. Yeah, Gary?
The drug companies need customers.
Okay. What else? John?
I think the economic conditions we're in are a factor as well, especially because things have shifted over the last couple of years that have made it much more difficult for young families to get started and sort of get ahead, buying a home and other things, just
mm-hmm.
with expenses and other college debt that a lot of people graduate with.
Yep.
So it can seem a little bleak at that age, that how am I ever going to sort of make it or establish myself like my parents did,
mm-hmm.
so that I can start a family, start to feel a little more financially secure, and
mm-hmm.
things like that.
Yeah, economic factors, big part of that. Yeah, Michelle? Yeah, I mean, hormones, puberty, you know, those things can play a part as well. Still developing? Yeah.
Even the transition, it's been kind of hit upon, but when you go from in a position of being in school and under your parents also, and then at some point you realize you have to start making the big decisions for yourself,
mm-hmm.
and that whole transition into adulthood can be threatening to some.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. How about even just like drug and alcohol use? I mean, that's becoming more prominent in younger ages all the time. Drugs and alcohol can play a part in that. I think that kind of hinting at what Jared was talking about, kind of the sowing the wild oats, you know, sexual promiscuity. You live the life that the world says you should live and you'll be happy, and they realize, no, I'm miserable. Okay, that can play a part in that. Health conditions, you know, chronic health conditions, that can play a part in it. Even entertainment choices, video gaming, music, movies. You look at some of these news stories that make the headlines of these young people that do horrible things. It's not the only factor. It may not even be the major factor, but it could be a factor in contributing to their moods, to their mentality about why they were doing what they were doing. The point is, there's a lot of factors. Yeah, Angela? Sure. Yeah, garbage in, garbage out. Whether it's physical or spiritual. Yeah. Deb?
Also, it kind of plays upon, like, you both brought up with health, and they're saying that there's just such more weight gain now and lack of activity. And, like, activity helps us with endorphins that make us feel good. Being overweight can cause illness problems.
Mm-hmm.
And just the whole thing of, if we aren't doing what's best for our body, there's so many things that are going to be holding us down.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to affect all realms of
mm-hmm.
our being.
Yeah, sure. Joan?
Some of it is hereditary.
I think it could play, I think your parents or grandparents, it might give you a proclivity to it, but I don't want to say because my mom or dad had it, I'm going to have it, which I tend to think more hereditary. Yeah, there's probably some kind of link there, for sure. Yeah, Rick?
One of the things that, of course, it varies, I guess, geographically, too. There are young folks who live in some of our urban areas where violence is a daily anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, with all the other things we see in the news with schools,
yep.
I'm sure there's a lot of anxiety in public schools in general, or schools in general, if there's a safety issue there.
Right.
But I know when I was a teenager, we don't have this issue now. We have a draft now, but it's not really implemented. It's the volunteers in military service. But in my generation, when you turned about 14, you started thinking about 18 because Vietnam was roaring and an awful lot of guys were going over there. And if you weren't, that wasn't in your game plan to go to Vietnam, you had to start thinking throughout your high school years, what am I going to do? Do I need to go to college? What if I don't want to go to college? Do I take my chances with the draft? And so that I think a lot of folks in these days don't understand how much anxiety that can cause. Some guys plan to go this year, it doesn't bother them, but
yeah.
Those of us who have got ideas,
sure.
For 18 years old.
World events and all kinds of stuff.
As the expression goes, life gets complicated after 18.
Life gets complicated, that's right. Speaking of anxiety more, this is also from the ADAA, 7 million adults have what is called general anxiety disorder. This is characterized by persistent and excessive worry about a number of different things. That's from their website. That's how they define it. General anxiety disorder, or GAD, is characterized by persistent and excessive worry about a number of different things. GAD, should have put that up there first before I read it. But this is a big deal as well. Anxiety. When a person has more days than not of being generally worried about something within a six-month period of time, they can officially be diagnosed with GAD, general anxiety disorder. Okay. Now, I want to take these ideas, depression and anxiety, and I want to discuss those two things without minimizing the issues. I don't want to minimize this, but I also don't want to de-Christianize the issue too. If we as God's people are supposed to view the world and the things of the world through the lens of what God says about what we're seeing, then we need to understand what God says about these things. And God does have things to say about depression and about anxiety. So I wanted to talk about that today. Can you think of a biblical example of people who had depressive episodes or who had depression, if you want to call that? Can you think of biblical examples? Yeah. Yeah, David had episodes of that. One thing that comes to my mind when they came, he was away, and the enemies came and took all their wives, for instance. And it tells us there that Jonathan came and encouraged David's heart. Okay, yeah, okay, good. David, speaking of? Job. Okay, yeah. Jared?
That was
mine. Steve?
Saul.
King Saul. Yeah, King Saul. So I thought David was called initially to play music to help calm his spirit.
Didn't yes. Even Paul, because of whatever problem he had, times prayed.
Maybe. The text doesn't tell us that specifically, but maybe. Yeah? Yeah, I think that's what she was referring to. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe, I'll say. Gary?
Some of the struggles Peter had.
Like what?
Well, when he betrayed Christ and was off thinking to himself.
Went away and wept bitterly. Okay, perhaps. Dem?
Was Jeremiah the weeping prophet?
Jeremiah was the weeping prophet. Wrote a whole book about lamenting. Yep. Dale?
Jonah.
I mean, you'd probably be pretty depressed too if you were stuck in the belly of a big fish. with all kinds of who knows what in there. Yeah, Beth?
Sarah,
because of?
Her inability to conceive.
Yeah, because of barrenness. Hannah probably may have been a similar kind of situation too. There are examples of this. One of the more major examples, I'm surprised no one mentioned this, is Elijah. You think of Elijah the prophet. Remember the big, you're talking about a mountaintop experience. When he was on Mount Carmel and all the false prophets were there and they couldn't call down fire from their gods on the altar. And of course, Elijah, they split up his sacrifice and on the altar, drenched it with bucket after bucket after bucket of water. And of course, God answered his prayer and enveloped the whole thing. Mountaintop experience. The prophets died and whatever. And then what do you find in the next chapter? Jezebel. Jezebel threatens his life. And Elijah runs and says, "Lord, I'm the only one." You know, woe is me, pity party of one. You know, your table's ready. And, you know, he goes off and he wants to die. Okay, that's a big example, scriptural example of a person in the scripture who had depressive episodes, whatever. We have two psalms. We have them listed as two. Some think they might be just one combined, but two psalms that particularly address this, Psalm 42 and Psalm 43. In those psalms, there are, you know, the questions ask, "My soul, why are you downcast? Why are you so disquieted within me?" Okay, so there's evidence there. And he talks about how all these things are piling up on him like wave after wave after wave upon his life. Okay, there's a depressive nature to that. How about anxiety? Can you think of any biblical examples of people who had anxiety issues? How about Gideon? How Gideon? Why do you say Gideon?
Because he was hiding.
Okay, maybe so, yeah. David?
Was it Barak, the guy who, the general who led against Sisera? He was afraid and he had, so was it, I think Deborah who had to do it for him or something?
Okay, what would be the anxiety there? Okay. Angela?
Simeon with the crystal. The 10 spies from Jericho that had a bad report. They had anxiety about fighting the...
Sure. Yeah. Yes, sir?
Personally, I wouldn't call any of those the anxiety disorder because they're just a short episode.
Okay.
Well, what we're talking about here is prolonged anxiety.
Okay. Well, some of it, we don't know the time frame, so it could have been lengthier than we think.
Their whole lives, they had to deal with it, yes.
Yeah.
But I don't think any of them really, in my mind, qualify for this topic.
Okay. Who does? Rick?
Moses.
How so?
I don't know if it was anxiety or lack of confidence, because half the time he questioned whether he was up to the job.
Yep. You have that multiple times there. How about the Philippian church? I mean, the most famous verses that talk about anxiety are written to the church at Philippi, which means they must have had some kind of problem with it. Do not be anxious about anything. Right? We know those verses. So there must have been some kind of anxiety problems going on there. I even think King Saul, after David slew Goliath particularly, and the people sang David's praises. Saul has slain his thousands, David his tens of thousands. And from that moment on, to answer your question there, that was months, if not years, where Saul was anxious about killing David. I've got to get him. Pursued him mercilessly, it seemed. There are evidences, examples of things that, of people that had these kind of issues. My point is, these issues of depression and anxiety are not outside the bounds of biblical truth. God is not silent about them and has addressed things to those important matters today. We just have to search for it. It's not always as simple as, let me look up depression in the Bible, in my concordance, and I'll know how to deal with it. No, some of these things require a bit more study, a bit more research, a bit more thought about them. Let me begin this by saying there's essentially two, and this is broad brush, I know, but essentially two big ways to deal with these things, two basic schools of thought. One is the use of this manual. It's called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or DSM-5, 5th edition. There's been multiple editions. This is how the world generally deals with it. Okay, this lists things like, well, how do you define depression? How do you define anxiety? What are all these different little things that go along with it? And it looks at the manual. And if you kind of go with the manual, then this is what you do. It's non-biblically oriented. Very much kind of the medical model kind of things. That's one general basic school of thought on how to deal with it. So based on this, there's a lot of medications that are given to the people who they say are depressed or anxious. The other basic model, of course, is the scripture. Okay, how does the Bible deal with it? This is the biblical model. It seeks not just to deal with the problematic symptoms, but primarily seeks to fix the heart of the problem. And I'm going to say this, the heart of the problem is essentially the problem of the heart. These are heart issues, largely. Could there be physical or physiological issues involved? Yes, there could be. And those could be addressed. We're thankful for medicine. Got a brother-in-law in medicine, thankful for that. I use a doctor. I'm sure you use a doctor. Medicine is not bad. It's not evil. But at the same time, we have to understand not everything is purely a medical issue. There are heart issues at play in these things. Hey, Angela?
If I remember correctly, Martin Luther was often depressed.
Mm-hmm.
So from his writings, it seems like he was one of the great reformers.
Mm-hmm.
How did he address the depression and how did he address the biblical?
Never read that. I can't answer that. So I've never read what he has said about it. Maybe. I honestly have not seen anything from his pen about that. I don't know that I can answer that. Sorry. Someone else? Yeah, Shayla?
I think Spurgeon also struggled with depression.
Yep.
I don't know if there's anything he wrote about.
A lot of the causes I know of Spurgeon, he had a wife who was terribly ill, who hardly ever was able to come to church and hear him preach. That was part of the issue. He had his own physical problems as well. He was a sufferer of gout and other significant things like that. There were times he could not physically get up to preach for a month at a time. So he would go through some of these things. Those are at least some contributing factors to it. I don't know all the contributing factors to it, but I'm familiar with those.
I was meaning more like similar to the historical question, yeah.
If he did, I haven't seen it. I'm not saying he didn't. I just don't know. I don't know.
So would you say that in his case it was not necessarily a heart issue, but more of it was an issue deriving from his physical circumstances?
At least in part. Yeah. I'm not dismissing any physical or physiological issues. But what these two models do, this one calls it all that, and addresses it with medicine. This one takes that into consideration, but also deals with the heart.
Yeah.
And I'm saying this one is superior.
Yeah.
Angela?
Well, even with DSM-5, they look at it from, I'm not even sure I would say it medically, they look at it from a health point of view. So we mentioned several factors as far as what contributes to depression and anxiety, such as nutrition, such as environment, and events and stuff like that. They don't necessarily address those type of issues. They look at it, diagnose, treat with a drug.
Right.
Versus the Bible, which will look at it from, they talk about the temple, the Holy Spirit, of course,
you know, that are healthy for our bodies, and just our spiritual well-being. You know, obviously, if we're not putting in that garbage mentally and we're reading the Bible, that's going to help alleviate even the beginning symptoms. Or they just look at it from one point of view, while the Bible is looking at it from...
Maybe we call it holistic. Can we use that word? Right.
It's not like saying, don't use those things.
Right.
If you need them. Exactly. There are times when medication is necessary.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Now, let me ask this question. If you know the person who is going through something like this and they're not saved, what do you do?
You start by praying for them.
Okay, that's a good start. Yeah?
You tell them the gospel.
You tell them the gospel. Folks, that was a softball question, okay? Okay. That wasn't meant to be a stumper. Because their greatest need is Christ. I'm not saying when a person gets saved, all the problems go away. I'm not saying that. Don't misunderstand me. Don't misquote me. But when an unsaved person is dealing with these things, their greatest need is Christ. You can help them through some of the things in life and all that stuff. I'm not saying don't, but their greatest need and the primary need is Christ. Jared?
Yeah, when I was counseling down in Louisiana, that was the first thing that they told us to do. Like when someone comes to you and they have an issue like this, you know, depression, anxiety, you know, suicidal thoughts, you know, all that stuff, like the first thing they were teaching us to do is take them to the gospel and, you know, address the heart issue first. And then if they're truly saved, then you can, you know, bounce off. But if you're not saved, then you address that issue first.
Right.
And then that gives you a springboard.
Correct.
You jump into it because, you know, like you said, it's not going to fix all the problems instantly, but it'll give you a good foundation to work with.
Yeah. It's like, you know, sometimes I'm asked the question, do you think that there's demonic possession today?
Yes.
Well, probably. Have you ever come across a demonically possessed person? Maybe. I don't know. If I knew a person was demonically possessed, what would you do? I'd tell them about Christ. It's my job to evangelize them. The New Testament does not call me to exorcise demons. The New Testament tells me to evangelize the lost. And the same kind of thing goes along with this. People are depressed all around us. People are full of anxiety all around us. Are there attendant circumstances in life that can contribute to that? Of course there are. But the greatest need of a lost person who's struggling with these is Christ. That's right. Do we understand that? You know?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Another question. So do you think that depression, when it's not physiological, meaning it's not something you don't have control of,
yep,
it's a heart issue, you can sin?
Yeah. I mean, anxiety, for instance, Philippians 4. Yes. Don't be anxious. I'm anxious. I'm sinning. Yeah. Let me say this. Oftentimes, what this model will say is that there are chemical imbalances in a person's brain that's causing this, or at least that's greatly contributing to this. To my knowledge, I did a little bit of research this week. I'm not an expert by any means, but in the research that I did, there is no definitive test that tells you which chemicals are out of balance. If I'm told you have chemicals out of balance, I want to know which ones. Wouldn't you? That would seem to make sense. But again, this model, generally speaking, this model says, well, you know what? How do you feel today? How long have you felt this way? Well, you know, you may have chemical imbalance, let's give you this medicine and hope it'll help. Antidepressants. Do antidepressants work? Well, it depends on how you define work. But can an antidepressant cause a person not to be depressed mood-wise, feelings-wise? Perhaps. But it will not fix the problem. It will not fix the problem. Same with anxiety. Can you give a person anti-anxiety drugs and they won't be anxious anymore? Maybe, but it won't fix the problem. It'll mask things. It'll prolong things. Yeah, Angela?
The other thing with the DSM is based on a human perspective,
That can come, and also what is often happening is they're relabeling sinful things as just disorders. I first was really made aware of this many years ago when Crystal was substitute teaching up in Old Orchard Beach. She had a student that was labeled as ODD, odd. Okay, just odd label, I know, but oppositional defiance disorder. It's not behaving. Yeah, well, you have ODD. You have oppositional defiance disorder, and we're going to give you medicine for it. When what they really need is a different kind of medicine. Administered to a different part of the body, probably. Okay? They need discipline. They need God, ultimately. But it's a defiance. It's a rebellion. It's a disobedience. It's not a disorder. We all have ODD then, to an extent. We all struggle with that.
Pastor,
sir.
Question.
Yeah.
So as a pastor, a saved parishioner comes to you.
Yep.
With, it could be anxiety, it doesn't matter, some
yep.
We'll just call it mental illness for the time being,
yep.
Some emotional problem.
Sure.
And would referring them to a Christian counselor be one of the tools available to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. If I knew of a good one.
Right.
Yeah. If I knew of someone who I appreciate the training that they've had, yes. I don't know that any counselor will do, or any psychologist
right.
or psychiatrist for sure.
Right.
But and I'll give you a couple of resources like that here at the end. Yeah, Gary?
I would just say, in our society today, you have all the freedom to question the Holy Bible, but you cannot question the DSM-5 crowd. And I would say that there might be some elements of really medical issues that people have to deal with, depression and whatnot, but almost all of that has been based on a history of quackery and experiments and crazy stuff. You can go back to the 30s, you can see these devices that they had. Now they use chemicals, you know, in pills. But again, nothing can be questioned. These people are absolute, and all of it is kind of experimental. You know, we'll try this, try that, and that's their history. But they certainly like to question the Holy Bible.
Be a little bit more clear in what you're meaning there, Gary. I'm just a little unsure. No, just kidding. Yeah. Let me say this about these things and how the Bible addresses them. When people in the Scripture were depressed, for instance, take Psalm 42 and 43. Repeat a question. Why are you downcast, O my soul? Why are you disquieted within me? What's the answer? Does anybody know that text? What is the answer that is given?
Hope thou in God.
Hope thou in God. He is the health of thy countenance and thy God. Okay, with anxiety, Philippians 4. Don't be anxious about anything. What's the answer? What instead of being anxious, what are we to do? Pray with thanksgiving. To put all those things together. That's the focus to God. That's the answer for a Christian, ultimately. Now, you might have to work around the barn a few times and get to the root of that and help them understand what's going on. And I get all that. But ultimately, that's how the Bible addresses these things. They're spiritual issues. They're spiritual problems. Is it what happens today often is that we live in a society that has elevated feelings. And if any person even feels a little bit off on a day, they think, oh, something's wrong. Is it wrong to feel sad? Of course not. Is it wrong to Jeremiah, like I said before, wrote a whole book lamenting what was going on with Judah and Jerusalem. That's inspired scripture. It's not wrong. Jesus wept at the tomb of Lazarus. Okay, you have examples of like this. But yet, oftentimes, I'm not saying everyone, but oftentimes people say, well, I just feel sad, you know, I don't want to feel sad anymore. I want to feel happy. I want to feel, and they elevate the feelings and in an attempt to feel good, however they define good, and an attempt to feel happy all the time, they think, well, I'm just not there, so I just give me something to jolt me. When really we just have to learn What does the Bible say about these things? God isn't silent about stuff like this. Yeah, Laura?
I was thinking back to what you were talking about a couple weeks ago with the shallowness of Christianity, and yeah. I think when people would read the verse that says, "Hope thou in God," if they don't know who God truly is and his character,
yep.
How can they hope in him?
Yep.
And a lot of people just don't have that understanding of who their God really is.
Yeah, they don't know the scripture. Christians, that's right. Going back to Elijah. Elijah is an interesting case study, though, too. So Elijah goes a long distance, fleeing from Jezebel. Woe is me, I'm the only one. I just want to die, Lord. What does the Lord do to him? Anybody? Deb?
Very patient, and he lets him rest a lot.
He not only lets him rest, what does he do?
He
tells him to rest.
And he gives him food and water.
And he gives him food and water. Yeah. That, though, is a very instructive thing, too. Sometimes what a person needs, if they're a believer, sometimes a very simple thing like you just need to sleep. You need to eat something. You need to rest. You need to rejuvenate a little bit. Sometimes that is just a simple remedy. That's what God did for Elijah. And that he reassured him, Elijah, you're not the only one. There's 7,000 other people who have not bowed the knee to Baal. And then he did even something else. He said, I want you to go back. I want you to anoint this guy. I want you to anoint this guy. He gives him a task to do. Elijah's job was not to have a woe is me pity party, but to simply follow the Lord and let God and trust the Lord with what's going on. Yeah. Yep.
Instead of their companions. They
yep.
pour out their heart to God.
Yep.
And God can use that. God says, okay. He tries to correct them. And then he points them where their focus should be.
Yep.
And I know that we all have that problem of not going to God first.
Yep.
We just kind of explode to whoever's closest to us.
Yeah, or we implode.
Right.
Frankly, that's one of my problems. I tend to hold things in. And that's not a good thing. I know that, and God is working in my life about that, but that we can either explode at other people or implode and just hide it all. Hey, Angela?
Just a little bit of personal experience. You know, back when the boys were young, and we went through the custody battle, and I lost custody, and there was so much going on in my life. You know, I didn't have enough money for food sometimes. I didn't get to see my boys. You know, all these lies and everything going around me. Circumstantially, it was understandable. You know, there was a reason to be depressed, and I was, to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
But I think ultimately, I was still questioning God, why?
Yep.
Why are you letting this happen? Why don't you fix this? You know, this person lied. Why aren't the, you know, the boys with the person who loves you? I was not trusting him,
mm-hmm.
ultimately. And that, I think, prolonged the depression, even beyond what the circumstances maybe even warranted.
Sure.
And I think that oftentimes is our problem.
Yeah. Yeah. But let me give you a couple of resources as we wrap this up today. This group, Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, or ACBC, this organization, it's gone through a couple, at least one name change, I think, but I quoted from Jay Adams this morning in the sermon. Jay Adams was kind of the founder of this kind of thing. If you're familiar with the term nouthetic counseling, that was largely Jay Adams' baby, and that has developed into this. This is a good organization. They teach biblical counseling, true biblical counseling. That's a good group. Another good organization is Christian Counseling and Education Foundation, or CCEF. They also put out a lot of good resources. To my knowledge, this organization will certify people for biblical counseling. You can become a, quote, certified biblical counselor. This group, I don't think this group does that, but I could be wrong on that. But they do put out a lot of good written resources with these things. So ACBC and CCEF. A couple books, one on depression, this is a book that I read years ago that has been very helpful. Spiritual Depression, Its Causes and Cure by Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones, David Martin Lloyd-Jones. Dr. Lloyd-Jones was a Welshman who pastored after G. Campbell Morgan in London in the 1900s, but before he became a pastor, he was a medical doctor. So he has the medical and theological perspective, very helpful. And this book, more recent, by Ed Welch, called Blame It on the Brain, Distinguishing Chemical Imbalances, Brain Disorders, and Disobedience. Kind of along, not just anxiety, but different things like that. Two very helpful resources. If you want to write those down, feel free. But there's many others too, but I just put up at least these two as a starting point. Big picture point today. When you're dealing with these things called mental disorders, don't just assume certain things from a worldly perspective. There could be a lot of factors involved. If they're an unbeliever, their biggest problem is Christ, their biggest need is Christ. If we're talking believers, they still need Christ. They need a heavy dose of the Bible, a heavy dose of the gospel. They need to be reminded of who God is. But the reality is the Bible has the answers. We just need to take time to search and study. Okay? Any last thoughts or anything before we get ready for the potluck? Yeah, Laura?
I think one thing you mentioned with Elijah is God provided for him. God gave him the rest, but yeah. He gave him a task to yeah. go. And I think sometimes the tendency is to be so inward focused that you wallow in that.
Yeah.
Rather, and then if you are given a task, you feel fulfillment in doing that task.
Yes. Depressive people tend to do what?
Nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. So I think that was part of it. Yeah. God says, no, here's a task for you to do. That's important. Anything else? Caleb?
Yeah. One verse that always comes to mind when I think of this is Romans 12, verse 2, where it says, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind.
Yeah. The mind renewal is important in these things. Yeah, good. All right, then. Very good discussion. Hope this has maybe sparked some things for you to study up more on your own, which is a good thing. But we'll go and dismiss, and if we can get